Other breakaway Masons, they who parted ways with the Jewish spirit of Dionysianism and its Near Eastern lunar rites, can be seen in German occultists of the fin de siècle who nevertheless were still bound up with the Jewish form of modern Masonry to a degree. Later during the Aryan revival in Germany and Austria, more Aryanized forms of initiation were developed, which led to the rise of Hitler and the backlash against Masonry, which replicated itself in other nationalist and folkish movements globally. Examples are the Hungarian Arrow Cross Party of Ferenc Szolosi and the rare work on Masonry by Ador Jan Baksay, The Crimes of Freemasonry, and its having been banned by Mussolini in Italy as well. The work of General Erich von Ludendorff, Destruction of Freemasonry through Revelation of Its Secrets, and that of Dieter Schwartz, Freemasonry Attempted to Reveal the Secrets of Masonry and Its Internationalism. Not much, however, in particular details was revealed, and a critique of Masonry from an exoteric and political perspective alone was put forth, leaving the reader without much of a basis for understanding Masonry both in its modern and archaic form. The movie Occult Forces by the assassinated Jean-Marie Rivière encapsulates this idea, that Masonry is Judaism for Gentiles and that it is a sinister cult bent on Jewish dominion over the earth. This perspective may, however, be only the bias of a Catholic or of a sectarian nationalist, though at least in Masonry's modern form it appears a valid criticism. Later, the theosophist Alice Say Bailey, an alleged Christian, spoke of Masonry as becoming divested of its Jewish elements as a project of the Great White Brotherhood of Adepts. Bailey was a distorter of Blavatsky's secret doctrine, introducing the notion of the Christ Ray, which parallels the messianic eschatology of the second coming of Christ and ties one into the thought forms of Christianity. Bailey may very well have been a Vatican operative. Masonry's principal figure is Hiram R. Beef, the initiate or entered apprentice, and he is a representation of the imperfect ashlar or rough stone that requires shaping through the initiatic process. The Masonic initiation process places the actual candidate for the order in the role of Hiram R. Beef as he undergoes the great work which purports to make good men better. Masonry is based on a theme of the craft or the builders and is a metaphor which many contend derived from operative masonry with the medieval stonecutters' guilds who constructed the cathedrals. Granted, these guilds undoubtedly existed, but masonry in its modern form, conventionally labeled speculative as opposed to the physical operative masonry, was from its origins likely an initiatic order having no relationship to building trades or architecture, this last being at most a metaphor that had some historically contingent reference or manifestation in the guilds during the medieval period. Masonry was always speculative, as the great work was always spiritual and never coarsely materialistic, and presumably extended from its origin to the present day in its current form, being based on metaphor and symbolism which at no point had any correspondence to historical facts but rather to eternal verities. The further examples of the Egyptian Netaru, the animal-headed deities, and the symbolism related thereto should indicate to even the most obtuse that these forms are symbols representing elemental forces and metaphysical principles, not actual beings or demons, being deific masks and graphic representations of states of being. Masonry is divided at this time at its lower levels of the pyramid into York and Scottish Rite, the former being more particular to England and the latter to continental Europe, though the Scottish Rite was adopted, as far as a writer is aware, from French Masonry by Albert Pike, its American possible crypto-Jew founder. Pike wrote a work on the Aryans, Indo-Aryan deities and worshippers contained in the Rig Veda, and his major oeuvre Morals and Dogma, the major work for the Scottish Rite, which amplifies the meaning of the degrees and the symbolism of this form of Masonry. The writer's personal experience in reading Masonic works has revealed that most operate on the basis of the assumption that the ancient Hebrews existed in Chaldea and the Near East, and that they are the penultimate source of Gnosis along with their Hebrew language, and that they should be the template for a world order incorporative of other Mediterranean and Near Eastern ideas in general. They posit that region of the earth as the source from which all wisdom derives, or at least the region of greatest truth. This, of course, couldn't be further from the truth, as all of these regions are themselves derivative crepuscular remnants, in the words of Evola, all of these traditions being mere hybrids and distortions of the Atlantean. Some of the Masons affirmed the existence of Atlantis, but most focused unduly on the Near East, which further underscores their subordination, at least during the time of the release of any of these well-known works during the Findus-y Ecla period, such as Manly Palmer Hall's The Secret Teachings of All Ages, James Churchwood's The Lost Continent of Mu, J.D. Buck's Mystic Masonry, amongst other works, all of which are saturated in pompous rhetoric and a groveling sycophancy before jury with such references as the ancient Chaldeans or Hebrews, etc. Masonry venerates the GOTU or Demiurge, which is the Big Bang or the cosmic disturbance of the force which generated the crystallization of spirit into matter, the beings of the higher planes becoming ever more materialized over the eons of time, creating the cycles of incarnation with the accompanying entropic condition of soul atrophy for those lacking sufficient spiritual development. In the Masonic view, the latter is reserved for the initiates alone, and all else can go to hell within their system of governance. Masonry deals with all of the Hebrew angels, and the same are undoubtedly the reptilian who jury venerates as their creator and propitiate with the sacrifice of they who are deemed mere cattle or animals, the Goyim. Perhaps, as Alice Bailey had alluded to, Masonry has been undergoing change which will extricate all of the Hebrew elements and purify Masonry. Perhaps this is so, and Masonry is no longer what it was during the time she wrote up to the 1950s. However, the writer can't claim any knowledge of these matters, and, given that Masonry undoubtedly entails possession by and immersion in the hive mind of these angelic hosts binding the initiates to, then it follows from the premises that to involve himself in Masonry is to play with fire, and not necessarily Promethean fire, but rather hellfire. Those who are generational Masons are undoubtedly possessed, and thus are not autonomous agents but governed by forces that control them and use them as physical instruments of their will to effect change on the mundane plane. These changes can be witnessed by all who have eyes to see, and only the blind can fail to see at this point the life-threatening changes being engineered by these architects of destruction, the chemtrails, wars and revolutions, famine and economic depression, as well as a falsification and distortion of history. Clearly the chaos being engineered is engineered by some craftsman or GOTU and his dark forces, and if Masonry is not a significant participant in this chaos, it doesn't appear to be opposed to it. Perhaps the Masons are fractured in their loyalties, and there exist rival factions opposed to one another, vying with one another for conquest and power. Perhaps the Jews are not in the driver's seat of Masonry via B'nai B'rith, as many of the Catholic propagandists allege. Perhaps Masonry or some of its splinter factions are serving the great work not of the GOTU but of the white race, and indeed humanity as a whole. This the writer doubts, though he doubts his doubt in spite of this. He must simply put forth his conjecture with respect thereto, and advise prospective initiates to consider it with a grain of salt, and, unless there is concrete and specific evidence to prove Masonry as a whole or particular sects thereof are anti-Jewish supremacist and accommodate the preservation of whites as an autonomous racial group enabled and not disabled from realizing their proper destiny of global dominion, one had best avoid all contact with the Masons and their Brotherhood of Man and Federation of the World. Secularism, liberalism, the liberal ideology had its origins in a vague yearning for freedom from the restraint and imposition of the Catholic Church. It is comprised at least in its classical form of the quantitative conception of humanity, to which it denies any meaningful particular difference, denies the value of organic culture, and seeks to impose its quantitative reduction of all to a standardized unit upon everyone who is not as yet a subscriber to its creed. As such, it is hegemonic and intolerant, though priding itself on its tolerance for any and everything that is pacifistic and wimpy, that supports its preservation and exaltation or even sacralization of the caprice of individuals and their transient opinion or impulsive action. Liberalism, in its classical form, is an ideology of quantity that effaces all quality and reduces the higher to the lower by elevating the lower above its level, and this through liberalism's principles being based upon the individual and individual's rights, and to a lesser extent his duties, and having no regard for anything higher than the coarse animalism or intellectual masturbation of the reasonable man, the average everyday bourgeois types whose motivation in life is simply domestic comfort or sensation seeking, reducing all motivation to libidinal economy, maximizing pleasure and minimizing pain. Liberalism's flaws outweigh its virtues, but nonetheless its virtues remain, those being the freedom to express oneself in word written or spoken and to investigate reality and to have freedom of association, conscience, religion, etc., the freedom to move about the country and to buy and sell, produce and consume. That most of these alleged freedom touted by liberalism are absurd in terms of practice not being supported save in those cases within the parameters of liberal doctrine make of liberalism an ideological house of cards that falls under its own weight, having no basis of support other than the subjective interpretation based upon the subjective and transient opinion and sentiment of the human all too human. The freedoms liberalism purports to grant are always qualified and restricted by the interpretation of individuals, be it in a court of law or in terms of particular policies of particular institutions or groups whose overseers decide in individual cases whether the individual is permitted, prohibited or obligated to pursue their course or no. These rules and standards are fluidic and flexible and change with circumstances and conditions. Change and adaptation is all well and good, but such change tailored to suit the flighty sentiment and whims of individuals is the Achilles heel of liberalism and renders it an absurdity. A classical example of the hypocritical and absurd nature of liberalism lies in the case of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. This alleged eternal verity reveals liberalism in its true light, that of an absurd and aleatory creed, one which has a protean nature forever shifting with the wind of opinion like a weathercock. It claims that a certain package of rights and freedoms are guaranteed but immediately nullifies the same guaranteed by incorporating within it the notwithstanding clause which proclaims that notwithstanding all of these rights and freedoms they are null and void when a reasonably demonstrable need exists through which they may be repealed or withheld. The examples of the creation of hate speech legislation and freedom of conscience and religion being nullified by one's holding opinions or beliefs contrary to liberalism are notable. Liberalism, as many have critiqued previously, is oriented more around tendencies than it is around reason, logic or facts. The sentiments one has within liberalism largely determine the acceptability or unacceptability of actions or words, and those who control the system import their own sensibilities into the decision-making or implementation of policy. When liberalism takes root, it is neither the letter of the law nor the spirit, but rather the sentiment in the breast of the lawgiver, maker and follower, which determines whether or not the action or words are permitted or no. Hence, within a society rendered tumescent and dysfunctional by liberalism, no certainty or trust can be had in conducting affairs, as, at every moment, the decision made by a bureaucrat may be one thing or another depending on their mood state and their particular bias. Liberalism is installed within a Gentile society by Jewry as a disintegration ideology, an ideology oriented around the destruction of their host society, a temporary negredo phase in the political alchemy of the black magicians of Zion. In the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, it speaks of liberalism in contemptuous terms: "We will eliminate the vile poison of liberalism." It is reasonable to assume that liberalism was not created in its origin by Jewry but by whites, and this as a further development of Protestantism, as a means of breaking free of the despotism of the Jewish-created Catholic Church. That whites are essentially free-spirited beings seeking to live in a manner which enables them to create and invent and achieve a meaningful life, the proper realization of their destiny as creators. Given that it is fair to assume that liberalism as formulated by John Locke and his two treatises of government in the 1600s and subsequently by Jeremy Bentham and John Stuart Mill in their works, it appears likely that liberalism was originally a white-invented ideology that was motivated by an honest and sincere desire for liberty from the oppression of the Catholic Church and its Jewish controllers. Regardless of origins and motivations, liberalism has been co-opted by Jewry to serve its agenda, and by the dialectical process of gradualism has been made ever more chaotic and a source of chaos, a tumor in society made malignant through Jewish influence. One need only observe what is called liberalism today at the bottom of the Kali Yuga to understand how Jewry has modified an otherwise useful and valuable ideology, though lacking in fundamental respects, and how Jewry have distorted it to cause harm to their host population. This as if to demonstrate the poison fruits of liberalism and its inevitable consequences, what ultimately follows from a creed of possessive individualism based solely upon the caprice of the individual counterbalanced only by that of the majority, allegedly conducing to the greatest good for the greatest number on the basis of arbitrary individual willfulness separated from any higher authority. Jury is right insofar as this creed is the be-all and end-all, taken in itself. However, it is doubtful that such theorists of classical liberalism intended their political creed to operate without the presence of any higher authority, as can be observed in the case of John Locke in his two treatises of government, the first treatise being a theocratic one, the second being its implementation in a civitas Dei similar to Augustine, only without the Judeo-Catholic despotism and with the individualism that is naturally sought by all creative and enterprising people. Thus John Locke's political stance, which was the original formulation of liberalism, was not without its value, only it was still bound and this of necessity during the time of its writing to a Christian theocratic worldview as well as to an overemphasized individualism based upon the universalist abstractions of humanity and their rights, etc. Jury's distortion and usage of this theory can be seen by the fact of their only teaching the second treatise in most contemporary universities, thereby restricting liberalism as understood by generations of youth to a purely secular plane of being without any notion of the sacred. This was a strike on the part of Jury and appropriating liberalism as a weapon to attack the power block of Christians and playing the white population against one another, Christian versus atheist or Masonic deist, and thereby advancing their blackening phase of political alchemy in lighting fires in the minds of men and reducing to ashes their previous cultural structures. This direction of liberalism toward individualism led to anarchism, the absence of any state, at least in concept, a concept wholly unrealizable in a social organism, with it becoming terminal and being taken over by other social organisms as the inevitable end result of anarchism. The black flag of anarchism further underscored the blackening phase of the hidden hand. Ideologies have been formulated throughout history by this group and have been plagiarized from others to destroy or tear down the societies and races they wish to destroy. The ideologies have elements which are desirable enough to serve as baits with which to serve those they wish to corrupt. Once they have corrupted their enemy, they may then use their allies to sabotage and destroy their enemies, they who, though to whatever degree divided, would live a life conducive to the realization of their proper destiny. The ultimate conclusion of liberalism, if detached from higher principles, is the greatest good for the greatest number and the pleasure principle of maximizing pleasure, minimizing pain, which we encounter today is in liberalism. Liberalism in and of itself, without any governing ideology overarching and restricting it in accordance with cosmic law and the positive development of organic life, is a recipe for chaos that Jury exploits to foster and cultivate as a metastasization of a tumor on society. This leads to the terminal state of social cancer borne witness to today and the horrors of revolutionary violence that they intend to use as a fulcrum to install their despotism as a just reaction against what they perceive as a fertile ground for revolution against themselves, should they not exploit it and turn it against itself. Liberalism, Jury and their agents seek to transform into a scapegoat for their own sabotage of white society, blaming liberalism for their own sins. Liberalism, taken to an extreme form of liberty without restraint, fostered and encouraged by Jury in their media mind control system and their ability to socially engineer their desired changes, is the gaily festooned scapegoat that Jury serves up to the slaughter and associates with anyone they perceive to be competition to their power. Employing this false association, Jury wishes to orchestrate chaos and have their witless slave minions attack Jury's enemies on the basis of this false association. The cowardly Christian conservatards would happily, as the historical record demonstrates, murder and burn to death their own racial members, be they women or children. The Bible, being the word of the Jewish demon god Jehovah Yahweh, advocates the murder of women and children. What's good enough for the Jewish God is good enough for the Christians, as they commit mass atrocities all over the earth in the name of this creature Yahweh, presumably a reptilian transdimensional alien who genetically engineered Jury with Neanderthals and their own blood. Liberalism in its classical sense is an ideology which is unsustainable in and of itself, but many of its principles are sound and acceptable, such as people having an ability without legal restriction to speak their mind and to communicate in written word or speech or in a static form that which is a manifestation of their conscious mind. This does not mean that the members of society would tolerate it or would desire it, but it is up to their own will as a collective culture organism to tolerate or no and to treat the creator or they who express these ideas, thought forms, etc. in a manner suitable to themselves, either with criticism or outright physical force. Though many in the pro-white and traditionalist movements are justly critical of liberalism, they are only seeing things in a one-sided way, limiting themselves to the narrow perspective of what they identify with their tradition or ideology. To castigate liberalism as the bogeyman of modernity but fail to understand that these ideas inherent in liberalism derived from Christianity itself, those based upon the universalist abstractions of mankind and God-given rights that each are endowed with antenatally as an incarnating soul in utero, is to fail to understand wherein liberalism errs. The patent absurdity of the pro-white conservatives and Christian traditionalists lies in the fact of their sharing more in common with Christianity and thus by extension with liberalism than they understand. They speak of humanity and mankind, of rights and guarantees of same, but do not understand these ideas are simply derivative from Christianity and are Jewish egalitarian universalist abstractions. That there exist no such thing as rights, that indeed there exist no such beings as humans as these latter are mere abstraction. A Negro and the Chinaman are called human and claim to be equal and have certain rights according to these traditionalists. However, these are just invented ideas and no such entities exist in any ontological sense. They are simply pragmatically useful functions to keep the masses in their pens and to enable their masters to leech from them their life's blood and for the masters to appear a benevolent benefactor of virtue, a bestower of wealth, a shepherd king of the order of Melchizedek. Liberal ideas can only function pragmatically to empower oneself within the context of a system based upon the weight of numbers, where the mass can drag down the higher to the pit and derive more benefits and advantages for themselves against their superior though relatively small number of opponents. Thereby the higher is dragged down to the level of the lower and the lower is enriched temporarily at their expense and ultimately at their own expense, as their perpetual demands for rights will either lead to the destruction of society or to the destruction of themselves as a threat to their society and its cultural stability, put down by the iron heel at the behest of their parasite masters. Liberalism, as an inevitable end result of its emphasis on quantity and individualism, destroys itself as it is not reflective of organic hierarchy and subordinate to a higher spiritual authority with sound principles based thereon serving as its pillars of support. Jewry, along with its Christian minions, has simply expedited its fall in attempting to install in place of liberalism their Zion despotism. The inherently chaotic nature of a system run by a priestly caste of narrow-minded bigots, a social system infinitely worse than liberalism and yet still based upon universalist abstractions and quantity, is the result, the goyim and the Jew as their mastermind ruler constituting the two-tiered society. Hence all of those traditionalists and right-wing nuts who insist on attacking what they have had identified for them as liberalism by their Jewish masters and media spin doctors are making a grave error as regards preserving any liberty they currently possess and desire. Should Jewry succeed in destroying the remaining vestiges of liberty and the liberal whites who support and defended, the world would undoubtedly be transformed into a transhumanized slave plantation run by Jewry via their technology, a technocracy of Zion, a two-tiered society of slaves and masters. Hence, though one may have valid criticisms of liberalism, he must be aware of the value liberty has and not allow his consciousness to be shifted towards supporting a pseudo-traditionalist despotism run by Jewry and their mind-controlled minions. Mammonism, the ideology of selfish greed, is what one can call the ideologies of capitalism and libertarianism, which, though particular and distinct in themselves, are subsumable under the category of mammonism. The ideology of mammon or materialistic greed, what many of the sanctimonious religious types would call worldliness. A devotion to acquisitiveness, or getting in colloquial phraseology, is the main drive and purpose of the mammonist. Thus to get is the intention of this type of believer whose ideology is centered around this purpose and motivation, getting, accumulating earthly treasures, and this in the form not only of chattels or real estate but the treasures of hedonism, candy of the five senses, sight, sound, taste and touch, by which one derives sensational thrills and excitation. Such treasures are the principal focus of the mammon worshipper, the mammonist. Mammonism, it is reasonable to conjecture, has its seat in the lower consciousness, in its tangible counterpart the reptilian brain, in which these desires are registered in the process of conscious awareness and interaction with the world. They who are incapable of elevation of their conscious mind above sensation and desire, directing their consciousness towards such focal points or attentional objects, become conditioned to devote themselves to that purpose, their mind becoming molded into a cubic shape, purely materialistic, becoming a blockhead governed by what Sigmund Freud called the id. The writer will take the liberty of labeling such figures idiots, as their I or self is oriented around a purely thonic state of consciousness, becoming no longer a subjective I present for itself but an objective I, earthbound and materialized ever more dense in proportion to one's attachment to matter and material states of existence. The mammon worshipper is adopting a mode of life conditioning him to become, assuming he was not already, an earthbound soul by virtue of his attachment to matter and hedonistic states of consciousness. This as above so below reflects itself in his behavior and appearance. The mammon worshipper is typically either excessively corpulent, wreathed with a Michelin tire man layer of adipose tissue, or he's excessively muscular, testifying to his consumption of excess food by which he pleasures his palate and congests his form beyond a state of sustainable functionality, becoming ever more degenerated as he ages, even though superlatively muscular, the excess matter obstructing his inner organs and wearing down his metabolism, leading to disease states through such obstruction. Her appearance also may reveal excess in her baggy eyes from excessive adrenal hormone secretion through consuming caffeinated beverages, liquor, and involving himself in sexual excess, burning out her brain stress axis of her neural circuitry and causing excess adrenal hormone secretion through such stimulation and excitation of the sympathetic nervous system, all in a desperate attempt, like Tantalus, to sate her insatiable desires. Her excess weight is typically accompanied by an excess of material possessions, which she in characteristically selfish form hoards for herself, oftentimes burying herself in the sheer quantity of material objects with which she surrounds herself, her fingers bedecked with rings of gold, her shirts of finest silk, and her body perfumed with the most beguiling fragrances, basking in sensualism and the excitation of the senses being her habitual tendency. The flesh pots of Egypt don't deter her from partaking of her coarsest lust and increasing to the maximum her endless desire for pleasure and for the greatest pleasure of all power, the ultimate aphrodisiac. Egotism is a corollary of mammonism, as mammonism has egotism at its base as the ultimate cause of the acquisitive drive to state and stimulate the ego, the lower self, which, in its base-born nature, is forever seeking and desiring stimuli. Hence any ideology which has egotism at its basis accommodates mammonism, if the ego in question is a false ego or mask of the personality behind which the true self is concealed. Thus mammonism and egotism are related as a principle and its agent, egotism being the principle and mammonism being one of its agents, and indeed one of its foremost agents. The redemption of egotism lies in its potentially centering around the higher self as its central star, and thus enabling transcendence beyond that of the transient lower self. Hence egotism is not per se wrong or bad as an ideology to which to adhere, but can trend in that direction and most often does. The ideology of libertarianism is this negative directional trend along which the transient lower self speeds toward its destruction, along this downward spiral path to crash against the square brick wall of matter, becoming an earthbound soul, ashes to ashes and dust to dust. It was an ideology concocted by Ayn Rand, the girlfriend of Philip de Rothschild, and was formulated during the period near the end of the Second World War as a means of shifting the attention of the baby boomers of the Western world toward self-interest maximization. This egocentric focus served as a means of facilitating the breakdown of their societies through decadent consumerist mammonism, and as a means of creating fragmentation amongst them through consumerist status-seeking competitiveness and an atomized individualism based thereon. This me versus you mentality was encouraged via libertarianism, which held out, often wrapped in the American Constitution, the promise of freedom without restraint save intrusion into the freedom of another. Indeed, liberalism was the source of this alleged right-wing movement that claims to be a reaction against communism but was simply the flip side of the capitalist coin of communism, all centered around a materialistic, purely worldly economic obsession with both sides of this kosher shekel, both left communism and right capitalist being economically focused, i.e. their attention being riveted on mammon. The law of the jungle is an integral part of libertarianism, meaning that each and all must vie with one another in ruthless competition for personal advantage, caring nothing for others and doing nothing for anyone but oneself, maximizing profit for self and his own as a means of maximizing pleasure and minimizing pain. The book of Ragnar Redbeard Might Is Right is an analogue of this variety of mammonism, the capitalist competitiveness being well described by its title as well as its law of the jungle, ultimately anarchic and of a libertarian bent. The end result of such an ideology is the collapse of society and the destruction of all higher culture and sensibility, the personality of all becoming coarsened in its madness for personal gain and greed and its apathetic disregard for others. He who dies with the most toys wins. The reality of such a worldview, of course, can be better phrased as, live by the gun, die by the gun. To live a life trampling roughshod over others incurs karma which leads to one's destruction. To play the converse role of the Christian and stumble over oneself playing Santa Claus with other people's property is equally false and leads to suicide, self-destruction, living without a gun pacifistically save in allowing oneself to be shot by others or allowing others to shoot others so long as they're not Christian. In libertarianism, the mammon-worshipping orientation becomes a primary focus, one's attentional focus being the acquisitive desire to obtain profit or purely earthly goods and thus become earthbound, losing his soul through its attachment to the natural personality. Capitalism in libertarianism are more or less aligned, with libertarianism being of a more philosophical and broad scope and capitalism being restricted to the purely economic sphere of mammonism. Capitalism is not strictly related to libertarianism, but libertarianism may be in its most general form simply as Ayn Rand phrased it in her book of the same name, The Virtue of Selfishness. Capitalism is simply the economic system and related ideology which supplies a materialistic means of acquisitiveness on a broader, more systemic scale. Capitalism traces its origin to Jewry, the perennial merchants of the Near East and possibly earlier still to Lemuria. Their ideology, which formulated itself in practice as a rootless cosmopolitan creed, was given tangible articulation by the English Jew David Ricardo, who created the subsistence wage and the origin of wage slavery. Prior to this, slavery was simply more tangible and not veiled under the hypocritical facade of humanitarianism, as the slaves had not as yet acquired adequate power and posed a credible threat of force to offset the power of the Slav Jews who, along with their Arab brethren and their Shaboskoi race traitors, had been involving themselves in slavery from the beginning, their slavery practices being codified but certainly not originating in the Talmud. The mercantile spirit of Jewry is fundamental to their nature, being sourced from their reptilian masters and the latter's slavery practices. The demonic nature of the economy so-called by Julius Avola is the creation of perhaps not even Jewry but these intergalactic slavers, so well depicted in Hanna-Barbera's cartoon Space Ghost and the episode of the Lizard Slavers, a revelation of the method of Jewry and an allusion to their overlords and creators. Mammonism thus is integral to Judaism. Jewry's practice of usury is also heavily emphasized in their political praxis, with the fractional reserve banking system constituting their major weapon in their occult war against the Gentiles. Mammonism fosters usury, as usury is a practice based upon receiving something for nothing and thus entails a taking without a giving. One could argue that the lender incurs risks in lending money and on this basis must have an incentive to give, and indeed, according to the mammon worshipper, he must have an interest or piece of the action in the form of money in order to lend, as he does not do so out of any altruistic other regard but simply owing to selfish interest and desire for gain. Hence the motive of the usurer is selfish gain and not any higher or pure motive but simply a crude mechanistic exchange of something for something else. Usury is therefore a feature of the Mammonist ideology and feeds itself through its practice. The more money lent, the more money generated, and this on a continual basis until this demonic economy crashes and must be reset via some external catastrophe, war, revolution, famine, incurring debt from foreign powers or the host nation of the usurer obtaining citizenship, titles, lands, etc. in order to alleviate the debt burden. The usurer exerts leverage in order to extort payment in the event of failure to pay on the part of the debtor. He does this on a small-scale level through hired goons, contract killers, hitmen, etc., and on a large scale through employing mercenary armies often flying the colors of the countries he has purchased via usury in past times or with whom he has brokered alliances. The Jew always gets his money, as the saying has it. The debtors who fail to pay have leverage exerted upon them through brute force or the threat thereof, usually in an implied mode to gesture and symbol. Usury is witchcraft by definition, as it is the generation of something out of nothing, a mere token or abstract universal value form, and on that basis a violation of the harmony of existence, wherein something is always exchanged for something else on the basis of the principle that nature abhors a vacuum and energy is infinite and can only be transmuted, not generated or negated from aught to nothing. Usury is a conjuring trick employed by the black magician cabal to gain a stranglehold on the wealth of nations, creating dependency backed up with a credible threat of force upon themselves and their fronts and proxies, who are their instruments of power the hidden hand can deploy against their enemy or mark. The National Socialist economist Gottfried Feder, in his The Manifesto for Breaking the Interest Bondage of Money, propounds a solution to the economic issue, while the Catholic Church had their own solution, both of whom were overcome, at least as of the time of this writing, by the hidden hand, through the latter's corrupting them or outright destroying they who couldn't be corrupted, for example the National Socialists. Usury is a form of vampirism and is motivated by mammon worship, the absorption of the substance of the other into oneself. This vampiric behavior is characteristic of Jewry, who employ vampire tactics in absorbing the literal substance of the other into themselves, for example Jewish ritual murder, vampirism and cannibalism. These practices have their analog in the demonic nature of the economy of usury, but both emanate from the same source, the demiurge and the dark forces which enslave this earth. The vampirism of Jewry and their overlords is revealed in its rapacity and the destruction of the earth by themselves and especially their minions, the Christians, whose utter disregard for the earth has transformed it into a devastated wasteland, and this motivated by their base-born greed. Perhaps, and even for the most part, it is not a desire for the endless glut of consumer products that motivates the Judeo-Christian conspiracy, but rather the desire to open up new markets, which can be translated into the phrase slave plantations, and which markets are not opened up for the sake of material gain alone, but to chain the population to the wheel of industry and to thereby absorb their life force as it is dissipated from them through atrophy, generation and corruption. The ley line system and architectural layout of towns, cities, buildings, etc. are all designed to trap the slave within a literal magic square and to absorb the energies of the victim, as the victim emanates those energies into themselves, the priest caste hierarchy of black magicians and their reptilian overlords being transmitted via the ether and along ley lines and steeples, etc. The insatiability of the mammonists is motivated by a base consciousness and an inner lacai need to absorb the life force from others as means of perpetuating themselves, and a cunning awareness of energy economy, the conservation of the life force and not its depletion through constant stress and exertion. Hence mammonism, though initially appearing to be of a purely economic and materialistic nature, is actually a behavioral translation of vampirism and indeed of the cosmic vampire, the demiurge himself. Mammonism is the ideology of the dark forces of this world, which have through their actions devastated the earth and created nothing but chaos. The wise will avoid their path and strike out on his own, that of asceticism, and avoid falling victim to temptations of both a financial and fleshly nature. Scientism, the religion of modernity thus far in the low point of the Kali Yuga, has become scientism, a veneration of matter and all that which can be subjected to the instrumental analysis of the scientific method, which method applies exclusively to the phenomenal plane of being or the world. The conceptual abstractions of science are all based upon quantity, what Hegel referred to as formal quantity, arid abstractions unrelated to reality and based upon purely human invention. All things, when subjected to the violence of science, become what they are not, reduced to quantity, the lowest dimension of being, pure matter. René Guénon spoke of this fact of modernism in his work The Reign of Quantity and the Signs of the Times. The language of science is based upon mathematics, formal quantity, and is an abstracting of the essence of beings, rendering them barren simulacra of themselves. Hence science is violence, and the violation of the beings treated of via the scientific method is a necessary consequence of science in its application. Theoretical science is simply the development or invention of various barren or arid abstractions into what purports to be a consistent or integrated system of knowledge, and the subsequent application of this knowledge follows ordinage geometrico from its theoretical base. The notion of consistency within a science which delimits it and segregates it from others is an absurdity, as what is segregated is simply a theoretical construct comprised of words and formulate that are claimed to differ from other words and formulae, mere abstractions. The notion of correspondence and the correspondence theory of truth lies at its basis, and indeed lives is the proper word, as no correspondence exists between words and objects. This is critiqued adequately, albeit in no academic philosophical form, by Nietzsche in his work on truth and lies, in a non-moral sense that the notion of words denoting objects is at best a mobile army of metaphors, metonyms, and anthropomorphisms, in short, a sum of human relations, which have been enhanced, transposed, and embellished poetically and rhetorically. Hence words are at best poor vehicles to describe, explain, predict and articulate or convey reality, which latter can only be experienced, and this via different nodes of consciousness within the larger fabric of reality, as Leibniz wrote of in the Monadology. Science imposes violence upon being as it attempts to grasp and control being. In doing so, it creates via its application in technology a perpetual violation of the harmony of existence, chaotic motions in the ocean of being which have karmic repercussions that only now, at this time of a devastated earth and degraded humanity to the level of witless slaves, can be seen. These slaves are controllable by that same technology and the wizards of Zion who pull the levers and gears of their technocracy. The quantitative language of scientism purports to be universal, applying to all and everything, and this by virtue of its barrenness, its completely limited and abstract form devoid of content and occupying itself only with itself as mere wooden abstractions. Indeed, perhaps metallic abstractions would be a preferable term, as metal is elemental of the most base form of conscious life, wood being a once living structure retaining its properties of organic life, the life force. That language does not apply to anything, but is instead simply an ontological fact, a crystallization of thought forms in graphic or sonic form mediated through the consciousness of a particular race or species at a given time and place, demonstrates the absurdity of scientism. Hence there is no reality to any scientific notions other than their being mere notional entities which have different meaning for different groups and individuals at different times. There are no eternal verities encoded in language, and at most symbols may be made intelligible to relatively similar groups of beings, and this to the degree of their similarity as a group and the similarity of their spatio-temporal conditions. Scientism as an ideology is venerated in the modern world as knowledge or truth per se, the authoritative standard of what is and is not reality according to science. Science, far from possessing any truth, is merely a pragmatically useful form of conceptualization of reality which, in its modern form not having any harmonious application, can only be used for so long before implodes on itself through its own violence. The technologies of implosion are they which to a much greater degree correspond with a harmonious world order than they which operate on the basis of explosion, such as the technology of today. The implosive technology creates minimal to no disturbance of the force and minimal to no residue in the form of pollution. This technology has been suppressed by the dark forces and their earthly agents, perhaps as a means of terraforming the earth so that their overlords, the reptilian aliens, can live on it in a way more conducive to their particular biological function, possibly requiring a greater carbon dioxide and or monoxide rich atmosphere to respire. The dialectic of the Dark Enlightenment, of those of the false light is designed to create chaos through ultimately violent means, and the deliberate pollution of the atmosphere creates the chaos. They can blame on capitalism or other scapegoats to justify the installation of the technology they have suppressed, the implosive technology created by the Aryans, and thereby crown themselves as Messiah, blaming the Aryans for what they jury have done. Either this, or they desire the continuing destruction of the Earth to accommodate not only their insatiable greed but their reptilian masters, as aforesaid. Regardless of their motive, they are easily proven to be the cause of the use of dangerous and violent technology. A few examples will suffice to underscore this point. Monsanto, the Jewish Monsanto family being its controllers, devastating and controlling the food supply, weapons of mass destruction, hydrogen bombs, white phosphorus, biological weapons such as vaccines made in the State of Israel, and other weapons made by their proxies and paid intellectual workers in America and other regions of the earth, the pollution of the air supply with chemtrails, the pollution of the ether with EMF, the pollution the water supply with chlorine and fluoride, amongst countless other technological violations of the earth and its population. All of this fallout and destruction traces itself to the conceptual abstractions of what is called science itself, formulated by the black magicians in their alchemical transmutation of the organic into the inorganic and attempting to hybridize, synthesize and distort reality into a different form that is made in their image in a godlike fashion. This can't be called so much Luciferian as satanic, in the sense of being adversarial to the harmony of existence, not leading to a higher synthesis for all but merely a degradation of the good, the true and the beautiful, the Aryan race and all organic life becoming transmuted into the inorganic or synthetic abomination of the desolator. The reductio ad absurdum of the modern world is derived from this abstract and artificial conceptualization of reality. In reducing everything distinct and organic into a unitary amalgam, the consequence is the destruction of everything which has history and heritage, and its violation and ultimate destruction by the process which has been called westernization, meaning in occult terms where the sun sets, i.e. materialization or reductio ad quanta, reducing all to a purely quantitative level, the lowest vibration of being. This process spreads through its vectors the Jews, who by virtue of their nature as the most Western race transmit this materialistic thonic tendency toward they with whom they came in contact, and through such means co-opt those they have corrupted. This process is exemplified in the movie Judsus, based upon the book of the same name by Lion Feuchtwanger. The westernized nation process begets through its spread the lowest common culture, as Baudrillard referred to it, based upon the lowest common denominator, all higher culture and society being degraded and reduced to that which has universal appeal, that which appeals to the lowest average, the most coarse and low-minded. And science, far from elevating humanity to any higher level, simply degrades and drags down to the lowest level all who prior to this influence of westernization occupied a relatively proximal relationship to the divine. Hence science is the instrument whose shears clip the angel's wings and cause Icarus to plummet to the rocks of densest matter from his intended height of spiritual consciousness. Not only does science reduce all to the lowest level of being, it creates a standardized population of raceless and rootless cosmopolitans, and thus is perfectly compatible with the commodification of humanity, and accommodates the internationalism of the merchant caste with its selfish disloyalty to blood and soil, all being or becoming under its influence citizens of the world, and indeed, irregardless of the pseudo-spirituality of monotheism and its abstract oneness called God, worldly denizens without any attachment to higher reality, and having been violated in their being and wrenched from the spatio-temporal limitations in which they have developed an organic culture properly their own, the folkish culture of the people in their proper place. They have thus become, have these internationalists, strangers in a strange land without any home, and have thus been reduced to a consumer-producer economic unit, a buyer, seller and consumer of goods. They have not themselves escaped this state and have become a commodity under the influence of the reign of quantity, having to sell themselves and allow themselves to be consumed in their life force by others in order to consume on their own account, as a condition of perpetuating their struggle for existence against everyone and anyone, all of whom are rendered competitors, predators and prey. Within this context of possessive individualism or its socialist or communist form of collectivism without regard for organic distinction, all are rendered equal at least theoretically according to the scientific theories of the Black Magicians of Zion. This is the Kalergi plan in action, and if scientism alone does not achieve its manifestation, the monotheist religions are intended to fill the gap of the mongrelization agenda, being played off against scientism. Mathesis Universalis, the universal language is developed to engineer the universal Eurasian Negro who will constitute the subordinate population of the Jews and their hybrid European stock with whom they have interbred. This, the writer thinks, is their motive in any case, retaining enough white genetics mingled with their own so that they can perpetuate themselves ad infinitum by the cycles of incarnation and the law of attraction or sympathetic resonance, the Jewish souls reincarnating in similar bodies over time. Science in its contemporary form has become scientism, has become more materialized and quantized, reduced to abstract quantity and separated from the sacred science which based itself on quality. Each individual science is a satanization of its antecedent sacred form. Chemistry is a quantization, quantification of alchemy misunderstood and distorted into a practice of manipulation of matter at a chemical level. Mathematics is an abstract, formalized, quantized form of numerology, the sacred science of number. Geometry is its analog, a distortion of sacred geometry, and physics is a materialization of metaphysics which restricts itself to the phenomenal, mundane plane of being. This is the plane of the demiurge, the GAOTU, which Jury and their cohorts venerate and obsessively focus on, not having anything to aspire to beyond this dimension of being. Scientism is one means amongst others by which to restrict the consciousness of the population to this world and to prevent the dark forces from defeating them on this earth, as having no willingness to risk that which they have forgotten they have a soul, which must be fought for, and this against the evil horde which enslave this earth and would drag all down into the abyss with them. Racialism, Nordicism, the writer will subsume under the category Nordicism the Volkish ideological currents which eventually crystallized in the Third Reich but which were its antecedents. Nordicism culminated in Adolf Hitler as a lightning flash of the preliminary thunder and extended its current throughout the Third Reich and after the Second World War, as the section Esoteric Hitlerism exposes. The foremost figures that were the germs of the Nordicist idea could be divided into two complementary factions, neither mutually exclusive and both interpenetrating in some of their representatives. On the one hand, there was Guido von Liszt, the Austrian who was the first to articulate what he referred to as the Arminist tradition in his comprehensive introductory works, along with his affiliated Arminists who continued his work up to the Second World War in their own publicly available writings. On the other hand, Jörg Lanz von Liebenfels, the founder of the New Templi or Den. The latter's works were of an Aryo-Christian variety, merging together a quasi-Christianity interpreted along Nordicist lines as a proper understanding of the Bible. Von Liebenfels was a scholar and former Cistercian monk who had been defrocked by the Catholic Church for his heretical teachings. He formed the New Templar Order and a magazine oriented around his teachings called Ostara, which spanned over 100 issues during its course, and which magazine was read by Adolf Hitler as a youth in Austria, where Lanz originated and established his order. Lanz's teachings centered around a Nordicist interpretation of history in which the Jews, according to him, were the blue-eyed and blonde-haired people. The degradation of the racial purity of the Aryan through intermixture with the beast man, the hybrid creatures which he interpreted the Bible as well as ancient apocryphal texts and Babylonian stelae is referencing. In his work Theozoology, or the Science of the Sodomite Apelings and the Divine Electron, he undergoes a detailed hermeneutical analysis of these texts and primary sources, as well as presenting graphic images of the state and their depictions of anthropoidal beings chained and controlled by Babylonians whose faces resemble those of whites. He contends that the fall of man resulted from the interbreeding that occurred through the pure-blooded Aryan and the anthropoid beast man, and that all contemporary non-whites are hybridized products of this miscegenation, and that the white race lost much of its higher faculties through such mixture. Other sources have considered these anthropoids to have been the remnants of Lemuria, who migrated into the area of the earth occupied by the Aryan race at later times prior to the sinking of the continent of Lemuria, its remnants now submerged under the ice of Antarctica. Von Liebernfels stated in this work that only through transmuting and controlling the base drives and through eugenical upbreeding could Aryan mankind continue to exist and to regain its first estate, that which existed in antediluvial times. He claimed that the divine spark was exclusive to the white race and existed only in them. Radiation of certain kinds, he contended, would elevate the consciousness of the Aryan, transforming them into Superman, they being endowed with a higher consciousness and more capable of manifesting the divine will through their acts. Jörg Lanz von Liebernfels was a proponent of astrology and incorporated it in a work which is not publicly available as far as the author is aware, entitled Practical Theoretical Handbook of Ariosophic Astrology. He apparently was affiliated with Werner von Bülow, who was also an astrologer. Von Liebernfels' work is largely untranslated into contemporary language script, being only available in the Fraktur script, which was banned in the Third Reich by Martin Bormann. Von Liebernfels was ordered to cease to write during the Third Reich, perhaps owing to the divergence from the National Socialist Weltanschauung, though this writer cannot say for sure. The Arminists began to come out publicly through Guido von Liszt, who put forth his conceptions in the comprehensive guidebooks, The Secret of the Runes and The Rite of the Aryo-Germanic Folk. The former work went through the history of the Arminian Futhorc with its 18 runes, which many modernists have claimed to be invention, though this is not the case, it being more ancient than either the elder or younger Futhorc and a source of rune workings utilized by the Arminists, the Aryan adepts who are the torchbearers of the primordial Aryan tradition. Von Liszt's work revealed the presence of the runes in heraldry and their meaning and use, their being symbolic of metaphysical concepts and employed in magical workings. In his work The Rite of the Aryo-Germanic Folk, he discusses the Rite, which means the law of the Nordico-Germanic race, and how it was oppressed and all but destroyed by Christianity. This latter work reveals the most ancient law of the most ancient race of human on earth and the